call this meeting of the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy to order. We do have a quorum present. Also, we have Representative Hollins participating remotely per Rule 10.05, Remote House Operations. Vice Chair Feist will assist in communications with Representative Hollins today. Hopefully, we are not impacted by the outage going on with cell phone service that I'm hearing about from many people. Before we get to our agenda, just a few housekeeping items that we have. Everyone here today must be seated when in the hearing room. There is no standing or sitting in the walkways or aisles. If you need further accommodation, please let staff know. Signs aren't permitted in the hearing or in the hearing room at all or at the testifiers table. Please leave signs outside. We won't tolerate any clapping or disruptions. And all testifiers have been provided in advance with a time limit for their testimony. Hopefully they've typed it up, they've practiced, and know that it is at the time limit. And we try our hardest to adhere just because we want to hear from as many people as possible, and we do have a full agenda. I also want to note for our members that you should have received an invitation to tour the Southern Valley Alliance, a Shakopee-based organization dedicated to supporting victims of domestic violence. The invitation came from Representative Tabke, and really in relation to left. Are we okay here? Okay. All right. Anyway, just wanted to say, as a result of the hearing last week on advocates and shelters, I really encourage members of the community to tour shelters in your districts and learn more about the programs that are offered. And if you are having those tours and you want to invite other members of the committee, please feel free to do so. So, as I said, we have a full agenda with six bills. The first order of business is to approve last meeting's minutes. Representative Ingen, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 20th, 2024?
That is my motion, Madam Chair.
Any discussion? All those in favor of approval of the minutes for February 20th, 2024, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Hollins. We heard you also voting as well. All right, our first bill on the agenda today is Majority Leader Long's bill, House File 3369. I will move that House File 3369 be placed on the General Register. Representative Long, your bill is before us. And before we do that, we do have, I think we're going to do the amendments later. So if you can please tell us about your bill, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you for having me back. So in 2023, I carried a bill that we passed to the legislature to establish a five-year statutory cap on felony probation lengths with many listed exceptions, chiefly for homicide and sex offenses. And the goal was to bring us more in line with the norm around the country. We were a real outlier in terms of our probation lengths. If folks recall, we had 20, 30, even 40-year probation lengths for certain crimes. And so this is was aligning us with best practices. But we have been alerted to the fact that we did not specifically mention attempts and conspiracies for the crimes that we had enumerated as exceptions to the five-year statutory cap. And there is a state Supreme Court decision, State versus Noggle, that has raised some concern that there may be a need to explicitly say that attempts or conspiracies are not covered under the five-year cap. So this was a recommendation from the Sentencing Guidelines Commission to make that change, and that would be consistent with the original intent of the bill.
Thank you. And I believe we have one testifier. Actually, Nate Wrights is available for questions if we've got them. So I'm just go ahead and come on up in case that happens. Do we have any members of the public wishing to testify on this bill? All right, I'm not seeing any. And so before we get into questions and member discussions, we have the A2 amendment. I am not sure who's offering the A2 amendment. Lead Novotny to the A2 amendment.
Chair Mueller, when the House DFL proposed this five-year cap in 2019, the House Republicans opposed it then. When the Sentencing Guidelines Commission proposed a five-year cap in 2020 after the House couldn't get the Senate to agree to the cap, we opposed it then. When the DFL-controlled legislature enacted a five-year cap last year and made it retroactive, we opposed it then. At the very least, violent crime should be excluded from the five-year cap. Yes, the bill has an exclusion for murder and criminal sexual conduct. But many crimes still have a five-year state sentence cap. They include first-degree assault, domestic assault by strangulation, robbery, first-degree arson, and unlawful possession of machine gun. My A2 amendment excludes violent crimes in both the criminal code and 609 and the firearm statutes of Chapter 624 from the five-year probation cap. I am familiar with the arguments. Yes, I know that we had an occasional case settled with 20 and 30-year probations that were part of plea agreements in lieu of shortened prison sentences. Minnesota was a state that was long on probation, but we were short on incarceration. I think my position has always been clear on this, and I think that the victims of violent assaults and you know, in viewing that we've seen lately several cases where attempted murder have been pled down to first-degree assault or less, that we keep these reflections of downward charging still covered. Just because someone's a bad shot when they're trying to kill someone, I don't believe that that should remove them from having a longer cap on probation. And that is my bill, and I ask for a green vote.
All right. Majority Leader Long to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. I'd ask members to oppose the A2. We are already taking care of attempts. That's the proposal before us. But the A2 would expand the exclusions to include all crimes of violence under 624.712, and that would include all controlled substances crimes under Chapter 152, which would really gut the underlying protections under the bill for those individuals who have been committing controlled substances crimes, and expands it far beyond the list that we had carefully crafted to include person crimes, homicide, and sex crimes. And there's a very long list of those that are excluded from the five-year cap already in the underlying statute.
Member discussion. Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the Majority Leader for working on this. And I wonder if he could just remind us of the purpose originally. I suppose what I'm really thinking about is, as I recall, there's just really not value beyond that 5 years. Within 5 years, you certain know certain things. If the Majority could just remind us of the purpose originally of what we did last year, because I think that would help with this as well.
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Yes, that's correct. I think we heard support from probation officers themselves saying that there really is no value beyond 5 years. The research shows there's no value really beyond 3 years, if we wanted to be precise. But we gave them a little bit of a buffer in terms of probation. So essentially, when you are after 5 years of probation, you're checking a box. People are coming in, and folks are essentially waiting to have a technical violation, which often is sending them back. We, you know, heard from folks who, as I mentioned, had 20, 30, 40-year probation terms, and these are folks who have impacts on travel, impacts on their jobs, far beyond the window where we would see any benefit from rehabilitation.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, you know, beyond year five and year six, seven, eight, nine, I mean, we're spending public resources having folks check boxes where the research shows there's no benefit coming out of that. I mean, if somebody does badly on those first 5 years, then they lose the benefit of probation. There's a commit to corrections, commit to prison. But beyond 5 years, as I understand, as I recall, we're just spending public resources for no benefit and imposing these costs on individuals in society. So thank you, Mr. Majority Leader. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Lead Novotny, further closing comments on your amendment?
I'll just reiterate my position that this is narrowly focused to crimes of violence, and the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And Madam Chair, I request a roll call vote.
Okay, a roll call has been requested, and the clerk will take the roll on the motion.
Chair Mueller.
No.
Chair Mueller votes no. Vice Chair Feist.
No.
Vice Chair Feist votes no. Lead Novotny.
Aye.
Lead Novotny votes yes. Representative Becker Finn.
No.
Representative Becker Finn votes no. Representative Curran.
No.
Representative Curran votes no. Representative Engen.
Aye.
Representative Engen votes aye. Representative Frazier.
No.
Representative Frazier votes no. Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Hollins votes no. Representative Hudson.
Aye.
Representative Hudson votes aye. Representative Hewitt. Representative Mueller.
Representative Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller votes yes. Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Pinto votes no. Representative Tabke. Representative Witte.
Aye.
Representative Witte votes aye.
There being five ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail. There are no other amendments filed on the bill, so we can move to member discussion. Any further discussion? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Long, this isn't directed exclusively to you. We've got a couple of prosecutors in the room who can potentially weigh into this, and you'll forgive me for being a little wonky. But the bill adds exclusion for attempts to criminal vehicular homicide, and just looking at the statutes that apply to that, an attempt is defined as whoever with intent to commit a crime, so on and so forth. But then criminal vehicular homicide itself is defined as something that heavily relies upon the concept of negligence. So intention and negligence seem to kind of be at odds. So there may be an opportunity. I assume this is being laid over.
No, the motion is to send it to the general register.
Okay. Well, there may be some work that needs to be done to clarify that language or to insert some language clarifying what the intent is in this particular case of applying the concept of attempts to criminal vehicular homicide, just so that there's clarity for prosecutors going forward.
And Majority Leader Long, I don't know if you want to address it, or even maybe Director Reitz, if you wanted to take a crack, or I see Chair Pinto, maybe. Who wants to answer this question?
I'll defer to the charging prosecutor, Chair Pinto.
Yeah, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Hudson. I guess my thinking, Representative Hudson, is that to the extent that there is a concern with that, and I don't know that I've charged that crime, and maybe because, yeah, those doesn't quite add up, but that would be, I guess, that to my mind, that doesn't relate directly to this bill, right? If that is an issue, then there may be something with regard to the definition of criminal vehicular homicide or the attempt statute. The idea is sort of like, if somebody could creatively figure out a way to do it, whether creatively or otherwise, the idea is just we'd want to make sure that they wouldn't want to make sure that then the same limit would apply as if they were convicted of the underlying crime. So I don't quite know whether, in fact, there is an issue. You may have identified one, but if there is, it wouldn't be something to my mind that would relate directly to this bill.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. I think Mr. Johnson might be able to offer some further explanation.
Madam Chair, Representatives, I'll just say briefly, it is generally true that an attempted crime does require intent to commit the underlying crime, the targeted crime. That's a part of the attempted crime. Criminal vehicular homicide and criminal vehicular operation both have multiple ways of committing those offenses. Most of those involve gross negligence or negligence with an additional component, typically use of alcohol or a controlled substance. There are two parts of CVH and CVO law, though, that could be intentional. One involves driving with an equipment violation, knowing that the equipment is in violation. There's an argument you could say that there's an intentional element in there, but more clearly, CVH and CVO can be committed after somebody leaves the scene of an accident. Someone could commit a driving offense that results in the death of another person and then attempt to leave the scene of the accident. And this is a wild fact pattern, quite frankly, members, but theoretically there would be room to potentially charge an attempted CVH under the theory that somebody caused the death of another and then attempted to leave the scene of the accident.
Any further questions, Representative Hudson?
Sure.
Mr. Johnson.
I very much appreciate that clarification, and just wanted to bring it to your guys' attention. And just regarding the point of it not being relevant to the bill, I'll just point out that in lines 111 and 112, where we're inserting language, it does make reference to this section 609.2112. So at any rate, maybe there's nothing there, but I did think it was relevant to bring up. Thank you.
Thank you. It is a good discussion. And I'll just say, like, this line here related to this bill for probation wouldn't provide, if a prosecutor can't charge a negligence crime with an attempt, this line isn't going to provide the ability for them to do that, since it's limited to probation. But I really appreciate the question and the discussion we've had on that issue. All right, any further member discussion? Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. For the majority leader, are there any charges under this bill that will increase times or increase penalties? Are there any caps that will be changed in a positive way?
Majority Leader Long.
Thank you, Chair Moll. Thank you for the question, Representative Novotny. So we're trying to clarify that if there are attempt or conspiracy charges, that they would not, that a court wouldn't interpret those as having the five-year probation cap apply. So to the extent that you would be receiving a longer probationary term for an attempt, then yes, you would see a potential increase in the penalty.
Lead Novotny.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Seeing no further member discussion, Majority Leader Long, any closing comments?
I appreciate member support.
Okay. I renew my motion that House File 3369 be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. All right, the next bill on the calendar is House File 3812. It's a Chair Akin bill, and I will move that House File 3812 be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary Finance and Civil Law. Welcome to the committee, Chair Akin. And first, before you present your bill, I do believe that we have an author's amendment, and I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author desires. Did you want to speak to the amendment now, Chair Akin?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think we can just speak to the bill language when it's after it's amended, please.
All right. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Chair Akin, go ahead and explain your bill as amended, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is my first time to the Public Safety Committee, so this is very exciting.
Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to present House File 3812 as amended. We're looking for a change to the statute 604A.05, which is a Good Samaritan overdose medical assistance statute. I'm working on this bill with Colleen Ronnie, Executive Director of Change the Outcome, which is a nonprofit she started after losing her son Luke to an overdose. Currently, overdose is the number one cause of death among young people. Colleen works in schools and communities to educate students, teachers, parents on the important aspects of opioid use, the disease of addiction, and emerging drug trends. Last year, we successfully worked to get naloxone in schools, and I've been told that it has saved several lives already this year. Colleen came to me this year with a concern about the Good Samaritan law for overdose and how it impacts young people who often use drugs in group settings. Our bill today looks to expand immunity from just the first person to call for medical assistance to those acting in concert with the person seeking medical assistance. This change brings this statute in line with the existing language in the sexual assault statute, and would give young people the assurance they're looking for to call for help in case of an overdose. We met with representatives from the County Attorneys Association, who I see in the room, and they're here today and may want to share their perspective. In short, they voiced their support for the intent of the bill and are here in case we have questions for them. But with that, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to my testifier, Colleen Ronnie, who can do a little better job of demonstrating the need for this bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Colleen Ronnie, and I'm the Executive Director of Change the Outcome. As Patty said, Rep. Acomb said, we deliver school-based prevention education related to the fentanyl epidemic that is impacting young adults across the state. There are many aspects of the law that need to be addressed, but today we are just seeking one change, one adjustment that will save lives and prevent additional public safety issues. In our work, we've presented our program to more than 80,000 middle and high school students, and we've learned that young people are afraid to call 911, to get help for someone experiencing an overdose despite the protections currently provided in what is commonly referred to as Steve's Law. The current iteration only provides protections to one person who calls 911. Just that person, nobody else. We have students who are actually doing the math. They are asking us how long they'll go to jail if they don't call for help. We're also hearing that when someone calls 911, others will quickly leave a gathering despite possibly being impaired because they don't have the protections the caller has. This obviously leads to other public safety issues that can have dire consequences. I've spoken with law enforcement officers from jurisdictions across the state who, in referencing the law, believe that this adjustment to the law to protect more than just the caller would be a good thing. It would make the law clearer and it would save lives. There have been tremendous shifts in attitudes in how to best address the opioid epidemic since the law was enacted 10 years ago, which indicates a strong support for the change we're seeking. It would also eliminate unnecessary drains on the times and resources of law enforcement, county jails, and prosecutors. Ultimately, the change we're asking for would save lives, which I believe is something we can all support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ronnie. And I think I can speak on behalf of the entire committee that we really appreciate your dedication to this issue and recognize the lives that you have saved as a result of your advocacy. So thank you. Do we have any other members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? All right. I'm not seeing any member discussion. Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Chair Mohler, and thank you, Representative Acom. I really think that this is a great bill. You've obviously put great work into it, and thank you so much to the testifier who's sharing this story. It takes a lot, and you've worked on this. The only question I have, I think right now we have an effective date of August 1st, 2024. Is there any, and this is just a suggestion, is there any possibility that we could have immediately upon passage?
Chair Acom.
Well, I wouldn't be opposed to that. Are you offering an amendment?
I don't have one in front of me, but after this, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, and I'll just note, too, it's going to judiciary. I think sometimes there's a little bit of a delay just so they can get the statute books updated and people aware of the changes. So I think that's a discussion that we should have as the bill moves on to judiciary, but thanks for the suggestion. Okay, hold on 1 second.
No.
Okay. All right, any other member discussion? Lee Novotny.
Chair Mohler, I just have a question for the County Attorneys Association. Looks like they're here.
Sure, yep. I see Bob Small coming up to the testifiers table. So thanks for your hustle, Mr. Small. We appreciate that.
I know
you
you're on
want
time
to introduce
limit.
Yourself and then Lee Novotny, you can ask your question.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Robert Small. I am the Executive Director of the County Attorneys Association.
Thank you. Lee Novotny.
Chair Mohler, Judge Small, just quick question. Does the County Attorneys Association have any concerns with this or the original language, and does this amendment address all of those?
Judge Small.
Chair, Representative Novotny, we've been in contact. We've had some very good conversations. We appreciate the representative's opportunity to bring us into the fold. We have suggested some little bit of a tweak.
That is an image now I cannot get out of my head.
I am so sorry, members.
No, no worries.
And I think we're working on that. But
yep. Lee Novotny.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mr. Small, and will they come back to me before we vote?
Sure, we can. I don't know if we have any other member discussion,
well,
so
let me just,
go ahead.
With the theme I've expressed to you in the past, there can only be one primary concern, and with the sanctity of life being the most, and the protection of life, this is the most important thing we can do, and I urge my members to vote green.
Thank you. Any closing remarks, Chair Acom?
Thank you for your support, and as we will see about the suggested changes as this goes to judiciary.
With that, I renew my motion that House File 3812, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, the next bill is mine, so we're going to just change things up here momentarily.
Collins gets to be at the big chair.
Yeah, we're co-chairing Representative Collins. Okay.
So the next bill on today's agenda is House File 3620, Representative Mueller's bill. I believe your motion is to place House File 3620 on the general register. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Great. Your bill is now before us, and I believe you have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, which puts the bill in the shape that you desire. Is that correct?
That's correct also, Madam Chair.
Great. And would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Great. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Representative Hollins, do you have a strong opinion?
Nope.
Cool. Those opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. There are no more amendments filed on your bill. Please tell us about your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So this bill seeks to amend existing law, which has been around since 2015, and it clarifies the intended purpose of these, the funds that are described in this bill, statewide efforts to prevent sexual violence. That is really all I have to say, and I do have somebody here from NCASA if there are more specific questions.
I guess we're moving to members. Is there any member of the public who would like to testify on this bill? Looks like no. Member discussion. Sorry. Next, we will have member discussion. Seeing no member discussion, Chair Mueller renews her motion that House File 3620, as amended, be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, the motion prevails.
We're going back now to my seat, Representative Hollins.
That might have been the fastest bill I've ever presented. So thank you, members. We are moving through this agenda quickly here. All right, the next bill on the agenda is House File 3937. It is a Representative Kern bill, and she's already at the table. That's amazing. I believe your motion is to place House File 3937 on the general register, Representative Kern.
Yes, Chair, that is my motion.
All right, and you also have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape you desire?
Yes, Chair, that is my motion.
All right, any discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. All right, and we're going to hear the bill presentation before we take up the A2 amendment. So please, Representative Curran, explain your bill for us.
Thank you, Chair and members. House File 3937 is an agency bill from the Department of Corrections, and this primarily amends the membership of the Security Audit Group with a couple provisions that you can see in the bill, and I'll have our ombudsperson explain that a little bit further. And let's see if we've got anything else. And we've got an additional requirement that the group meets twice a year and makes recommendations so that we make sure we're staying on top of any recommendations that may need to be implemented. And from there, I would like to turn it over to Ms. Zadra.
All right. Thank you so much. You, Margaret Zadra, the Ombudsperson for Corrections. So please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Mueller, committee members, Representative Curran. My name is Margaret Zadra, Ombudsperson for Corrections. This is not a DOC bill, but an Office of the Ombuds for Corrections bill. We are separate and independent from the Department of Corrections. Really grateful to be here today to talk about the State Correctional Facilities Security Audit Group in H.F. 3937. The Security Audit Group was developed in response to recommendations from the 2020 OLA report. I think most of you are very familiar with that report. In order to provide oversight and accountability within our state prisons, the group has now since been established and has had time to review and adopt standards. We heard from experts walk through all the standards that have hundreds of different components and adopted those, and then all 11 prisons have gone through the audit process. During that process, several opportunities have arisen to better utilize the group to ensure safe and secure facilities. So because of that, some changes are recommended to prioritize the following, including making sure that we have a robust membership so that we can have that accountability. So a little bit more flexibility in membership, and then expand to include other state agencies with expertise in health and safety, infrastructure and compliance, so Department of Health and Department of Administration, and broaden that language for the consultant position to allow for more applicants. There has been a really significant challenge in recruiting qualified candidates to that position. There's a designation of a chair to efficiently utilize group time, and then clearer reporting on the audit standards. Clarification on exemption from open meeting law, given the review of security information. I think that was always intended. It just didn't make it into that first bill language. And then application of 15059 advisory councils and committees where that applies. So this just allows, all of this is to be more robust, more efficient, more effective in that accountability. And it provides for better use of group time for higher level concerns and allows for lower level issues to be addressed internally at facility. I think that's everything I have.
Great, we'll just make sure there's nobody from the public. Anyone from the public who wants to testify on this bill? All right, I'm not seeing any, and so before we get to member discussion, we have the A2 amendment, and who's offering that? Lead Novotny to the A2.
Chair Mueller, thank you for hearing my amendment, and just to clarify the situation that's going on, I am a member of this group, and I've done my best to be active and attend the meetings. When we're doing the busy part of the audit thing, it's probably one meeting a month or a week that have been Zooms. And I did speak with the ombudsman after our last meeting, and we did talk about things that we would change if we could and try to improve the process. Didn't know she was going to be working to drop a bill with the suggestions, and I would hope she would consider my amendments mostly friendly. There's a couple things that we could, and we did talk yesterday about this also. There's a couple of things, given more time, that I would have change just to make the group function better and be more safe. The one correction that we do that I feel is important, and I told the ombudsman this is nothing to slight her position or anything like that, but the primary goal of the ombudsman is to be the advocate for the incarcerated persons, and I think she's got her position and purpose on the committee for that, but I still think that someone that has knowledge of the facilities and safety procedures should be someone leading this group. I also, through things that I've experienced and communications I've had with employees and former employees, I feel that adding a retired member of corrections would be a good person to add to this, from the standpoint that someone that retired in good standing, they've got the investment of their career and the protection of their former coworkers and the safety of everyone involved. I feel that they would be a good person to add to this. We also strike the part about adding someone from a security position that does not reside in the state of Minnesota. I feel that, you know, we can add people from the state of Minnesota that want to participate and have expertise that would be relevant. And I also feel that it's important to keep the physical plant person as a reference on this committee, because they have a lot of knowledge. And when there is, you know, we're talking about security, if there's going to be an escape or something like that, it's usually going to come from the mechanical or physical systems in the facility. So I think they're important. So I would keep them still on this committee with my amendment. So as I said, I hope you would accept this as a friendly amendment, and with the promise that we'll tweak this before it comes to the floor.
Thank you. Representative Curran to the amendment.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Lead Novotny, for bringing the amendment forward. And I I do agree that we want to make sure that we have a group who has the, you know, the expertise that we're looking for. And I do want to correct, in the beginning I misspoke that this was a DOC bill. DOC does remain neutral on this bill, as it is an ombuds bill, so I just want to make that clear. But going back to the amendment and some of the comments made, the primary goal is not just in the interest of incarcerated individuals. We do have information from the OLA report that indicated some staff were reporting situations such as a hostile work environment or how they might be treated at work. The conditions of the infrastructure also affect the staff. So I just want to be clear that this is not this is not just a group or not just a designated person who is looking out for the interests of individuals who are incarcerated, that it's every human being who is traveling in and out of that facility. As far as, I just want to break down this A2 amendment. In the bill, lines 1.15 through 1.18, though that added language more accurately describes the expertise needed and also addresses the difficulties that DOC has had filling the spots in the group. And so more specifically, when we look at the A2 amendment, line 1.2, reinstating that stricken language, that specific position has been vacant for a year and they've been unable to fill it. And so that would just continue to remain open. Line 1.3 on the amendment, the requirement to reside in Minnesota is unfortunately limiting the pool of people to appoint to this. So, and that actually would remove a current member who resides in Wisconsin. And so the point of, you know, the residency not being a requirement is that we have folks who are experts in the field, recognizing that we may not be able to find those folks all the time in the state of Minnesota, even though we try to do our best and we do the best outreach we can. I would also say on the amendment lines 1.5, 1.6, that while I agree, we do want the expertise of individuals who've worked in corrections. The purpose is to have expertise in correctional facility security overall, which is typically found more at the level of warden or assistant warden. And so, you know, that also being a reason why I don't quite agree with that. Line 1.8, I just want to reiterate that we want someone who's an independent perspective rather than someone specifically representing the perspective of any individual group who's affected by this group. And then if Ms. Zadra has anything else to add.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Chair members, Lee Novotny, I think we really share this similar goals in order to make this more effective and robust. I would just comment that the legislature created the Ombuds for Corrections to be independent and impartial and not be an advocate for any one group, but instead be an advocate for the highest standards of competency, efficiency, and justice in the administration of corrections. And so we do not focus just on the needs of incarcerated people, but also of staff and the communities that are greatly affected. I mean, we really would be, it would be a mistake to not emphasize how important the safety that happens within the walls and facilities affects the safety in communities throughout Minnesota. So I think, you know, our goal and our intent is never to represent one group, but in fact, those highest standards of justice.
All right, more discussion on the A2 amendment. Lee Novotny.
Chair Moeller, I reiterate my position, and I'd just like to clarify that as the author pointed out, it needs to have someone that's independent. That's why my amendment is for a retired member of corrections that is not worrying about being subject to discipline or their career. To say that a member, this is someone from AFSCME. This would have to be someone from the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and that represents the COs and the sergeants. And the sergeants, for example, would be someone who spent their life in charge of the A teams that are in charge of all the movements and all the responses to situations that day in, day out are responsible for the actual security at the facilities. I don't know how more, you know, involved in security it would be than someone who's there every day. Not to slight the wardens, but think of the broad spectrum of things that a warden must deal with every day: budget, personnel, human resources. If we have somebody from AFSCME that's been there and committed their life to the safety of everyone at a facility, then I think they are the person that should be there. If this is just a matter of getting people on the board, I wasn't aware that we were short people, and I would volunteer to start helping. But in short, I just think that the person leading this group should at least at one point have been in a cell block working with the inmates or incarcerated persons. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And before we vote on the amendment, too, I would just say that I assume that Representative Curran is willing to have continued discussions about this before it hits the floor. So maybe the two of you can discuss that. Representative Curran, I'm seeing you nodding. Yeah. So,
yes, thank you, Chair. And absolutely, I'm willing to continue work on this. By no means am I trying to diminish the work and expertise of folks who have worked in corrections whatsoever. Just, you know, looking at this broadly, want to make sure that we do have a person who is independent. I'm not saying that someone who's worked in corrections can't be that person, but to specifically designate that person is something that I'm struggling with a little bit. And, you know, for that reason and for the reasons I mentioned earlier, I encourage members to vote no on this amendment today.
So Representative Novotny moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor of the A2 signify by saying aye. Opposed?
No.
The A2 amendment is not adopted. All right. Any discussion to the bill? Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the lines that really struck me, kind of immediately raised some red flags, was 1.3. Not subject to Chapter 13D. Is there a reason why we don't want to have open meeting law apply to this group?
Representative Curran.
Yes, Chair. I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Zadra to explain.
Yep, Ombudsperson Zadra.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, we are discussing confidential security information at every meeting. I believe that was always the intent that it was exempted from open meeting law. That's just a clarification to add that in. That was always the intent.
Representative Ingen.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I just, as long as the Ombudsperson is there, I just wanted to highlight for members the report that the Ombudsperson issued just a couple days ago about crumbling infrastructure in our correctional facilities, which I assume relates to security concerns as well. And I found it really powerful, and thank you so much for your work. I want to encourage others to review it as well. Thank you.
Thank you for highlighting that, Chair Pinto. Any further discussion to the bill? Lead Novotny? All right. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Curran renews the motion that House File 3937, as amended, be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The next bill on the agenda is a Representative Frazier bill, House File 3958. And I believe the motion, Representative Frazier, is for House File 3958 to be placed on the General Register.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right, and there are no amendments filed on your bill, so please go ahead and describe the bill to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually something to clarify the investigative process for complaints received by the Peace Officer Standards and Training Board, known as the POST, for us that are familiar. Last year when we passed the bill, we provided guidance to the POST board to be able to, through their investigative process. And what we meant to do and what we intended to do was to make that a discretionary process for in terms of asking a law enforcement agency to conduct an investigation. But currently in the bill, there is a shall instead of a may, and we're correcting that and clarifying that so that the POST board does not have to request every law enforcement agency to conduct an investigation, but they may request them to conduct those investigations. And that is it.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. And I didn't know you had another bill dealing with shall to may, so we'll have that discussion here in a minute, I think. Let's see, do we have anybody from the public who wishes to testify on this bill? I'm not seeing any, so member discussion. Also not seeing any member discussion. I don't know if you have any closing remarks there, then Representative Frazier.
No, just that this was the intent initially, so we're getting it right now.
All right, Representative Frazier renews the motion that House File 3958 be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. The motion prevails. All right, then the final bill that we have on the agenda is House File 3489. This is the bill that we took up previously, and we amended it on February 13th, and we laid it over. We took public testimony on the bill at that time, so we'll not be taking any further testimony. However, I will note that several letters have been provided to the members in your packets and also have been posted online. So, Representative Frazier, would you like to move that House File 3489, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right, and your bill is now before us. Before we get to the various motions and amendments, would you like to say a few words about your bill, Representative Frazier?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. This has been a, it hasn't been long because we haven't been in session that long, but it has been long in terms of the engagement that we've had in the process to get to this point. And what I'd like to say is I'd like to thank all of the advocates, all of the stakeholders that we've had conversations with over the months and that we've continued to have conversations with to this point. I would say for the most part, those conversations have been respectful, and I've appreciated all of the feedback that we've received and the support that we've received in trying to clarify for our SROs and for our school districts around our SRO programs moving forward.
All right, thank you. So now, members, buckle your seatbelts, because we have a few procedural motions and amendments that we need to get through here. So the first one is we will reconsider the A2 amendment that was adopted on February 13th. A copy of the A2 amendment is in your folder and has been posted online. Representative Frazier moves to reconsider the A2 amendment adopted on February 13th. Any discussion on that motion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. I was actually pausing that time to leave time for Representative Hollins and didn't hear it. Okay, so then it is my understanding, Representative Frazier, that you would like to withdraw the A2 amendment, Representative Frazier.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right, Representative Frazier withdraws the A2 amendment. We don't need to take a vote on that. And now, Representative Frazier, you would like to move the A6 amendment to put the bill in the shape you desire. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right, can you please describe the A6 amendment?
Yes, yeah, so most of the A6 amendment actually incorporates a big chunk of the A2 amendment that was that was adopted previously with a few additions after further conversations with stakeholders. And I'll kind of run through what those additions are. The amendment keeps the training addition that was in the A2 amendment. We add the word Minnesota to the Juvenile Officers Association. We've shortened the timeline for the Post Board to develop the model policy to December 31st, 2024. And we reiterate that the Post Board must engage with stakeholders, and we further clarify that engagement by requiring that they meet at least three times. The Post Board has indicated that these changes will work for them. And because the Post Board will develop the model policy sooner, we also moved up the timeline for local adoption. We also added that local contracts should address attire for SROs, but we made it clear that the ultimate decision is left to local control. And then a big portion of it with the model policy, we restructured the paragraph in the model policy regarding use of force to add clarity. Specifically, there is a cross-reference to the current prohibition on chokeholds that added the exact language, excuse me, we also added the exact language from the duty section of the bill related to discipline, drawing that bright line to when SROs can engage with students. And then we clarified the current language of the bill related to de-escalation techniques specific to school settings.
Thank you. Any discussion to the A6 amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the A6 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. The A6 amendment is adopted. Next, we'll move to the A7 amendment, and I believe Representative Witte, you would like to offer the A7 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The A7 amendment, the bill states that SRO's contractually duties with a school district or charter school shall include and list many of the duties of an SRO. The Law Enforcement Association and League of Minnesota Cities wanted the word shall change to may. The A7 amendment adds language to an SRO's duties to clarify that nothing limits any other duty imposed on peace officers, limits exceptions that peace officers exercise professional judgment and discretion to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public when carrying out their duties, or creates a duty different than the duty to protect the public as a whole. The language is added instead of changing shall to may. The Law Enforcement Association accepted this language as a compromise. The A7 amendment also moves the date SROs must complete training. The bill language requires an SRO to complete training by June 1st, 2025. The Law Enforcement Association asked to have the date pushed out to December 1st, 2025 to give them more time to complete training. This amendment is a compromise and moves the date to September 1st, 2025. The date also makes sense because it is the start of the school year. That's the A7 amendment, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Witte. Representative Frazier, would you like to speak to the A7 amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I will ask members to, I see this as these as friendly amendments, and I will ask members to support them. And specifically, I wanted to point out that in conversations when we were talking about the shall and the foundational things that would be in the contract, one of the things that were raised by law enforcement, and I appreciated their lens on this, was the concern of being forced to arrest folks if they had to, based on the shall that we had in there, which was not the intent. And the lens they used was the focus on the disrupting the prison, school-to-prison pipeline. So I did appreciate that conversation that I had with law enforcement association members. So thank you for that. And then it made sense to move the timelines. As Representative Witte said, it will still have the training done in time for the start of the school year. So I support these amendments.
All right. Any further discussion on the A7 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A7 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A7 amendment is adopted.
Chair,
yes, Vice Chair Feist.
Thank you. She's listening, paying attention. She's having trouble unmuting quickly enough, but
okay.
She's still here.
Thank you. Yes, I'm moving along quickly, and then I forget that she's on the phone, and then when I pause for her to answer, then she's having trouble. But thank you. Thank you for your efforts, Representative Hollins. All right, next we'll move on to the A8 amendment, and I believe Representative Witte, the A8 amendment is also yours. You can speak to the amendment, please.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. The bill allows a school district or charter school to contract with an SRO's employee to perform additional duties than the mandated duties described in the preceding paragraph. The A8 amendment changes the word mandate to describe. This word change was also made at the request of Law Enforcement Association. The Senate adopted an amendment changing this word in Judiciary and Public Safety Committee yesterday. That's the A8 amendment, and I ask for your support.
Thank you. Representative Frazier to the A8.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Witte. We are making this amendment to align with the Senate bill so we can continue to move forward, and I would encourage members to vote yes for it.
Any further discussion to the A8? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A8 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The A8 amendment is adopted. All right, members, any final comments on House File 3489 as amended? Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Frazier. Man, this has been a roller coaster ride. I can only imagine what it's been like for you. But, you know, as I sit here as a member of this committee, looking at all these amendments and tracking back from where this journey started, my understanding has always been that prior to the language which set us off on this journey being inserted into the Education Omnibus Bill and passed last year, the standard that applied to all uses of force in every context has been the reasonable use of force standard. And so for the sake of myself and also for the public, I'd be really interested in getting your take on, after all is said and done and the dust has cleared on this, what exactly is it that your bill does?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hudson. You know, I actually don't like big roller coasters, so This was a very shocky, rocky ride for me. but my daughters would have enjoyed it because they like the big roller coasters. This creates a framework that we don't have now. We've had a kind of a mishmash, hodgepodge of contracts with different language, with different criteria in them around the state. Some places we don't have contracts at all for our SRO programs, so we're going to standardize that. We provide for a foundational level of things to be in those contracts, which is not uncommon for contracts, but then we still allow for the flexibility at the local level to add more pieces to that as they want to. But we provide a floor so that if folks want to take a look at it, or they will know, they will have the knowledge to know foundationally what's in that. That doesn't exist right now. So I thought that was important. We define SROs in statute. That didn't exist. Thought that was important. And then we create, by doing that, we create transparency, but we also create a mechanism for accountability if we need that. And then also we're going to be collecting data now that we didn't collect before, so we can really answer the question if there's an issue. We'll have data to back that up in regards to how force is being used in our schools. But to me, that was the main point. Had I worked on this legislation prior, these are the things that I would have asked for. I think it's in line with a lot of the work that we've done before to provide clarity, transparency, and accountability when needed.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier. The last question that I have is just regarding the effect of the model policy and what we anticipate going forward. Is it either the intention or the expectation that the model policy that's developed by the Post Board is going to have an impact on the scope of use of force that is available to SROs?
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hudson. My intent is, and I think I've been very clear about this, is to get the stakeholders in the room so they can, at a base level, have the same understanding of what they're referring to and what their concerns are and some solutions to how to address those concerns. And I do believe that once they get into the room, and this is based on the myriad of conversations that I've had with different stakeholders, that they will come to an understanding and an agreement on how to move forward and do what's best to make sure our schools are safe for everybody.
Representative Hudson.
I will accept that, although I'm not sure I have a clearer understanding, but thank you, Representative Frazier, and thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, Lead Novotny.
Chair Moeller, just want to say we appreciate the work that was done in this committee, and this is something that we didn't start, but thank you and Representative Frazier for helping us finish and fix it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Moeller. When law enforcement brought to us this, the whole time we've asked for a bipartisan solution. And I thank you, Chair Moeller, for the conversation, and Representative Frazier for our conversation on Friday, but also having stakeholders a part of that. And I think it's been a good discussion. I like the fact that even understanding the model policy, having people in the same room so they can understand each other and understand what is being said and said separately, I think will have a big impact as we move forward. So I'm excited to get our SROs back into school. I appreciate working with you guys and the different, and bringing in our other stakeholders, because that was missing the last time in this process. So thank you guys and for all your hard work.
Thank you, Representative Whitty. And before we turn to closing comments, I'll just add my thank you as well to Representative Frazier, the work you've done, the hours you've spent on this bill, to the stakeholders for their continued engagement, to Representative Whitty for your expertise as a former SRO as we were working through this, and just the members as you allowed us to lay this over and work on the additional stakeholder feedback that was done since last week. So that's how the process works. And I'm really excited about the bill that we're hopefully going to pass out of committee today. Any closing comments, Representative Frazier?
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may, and this is a question to staff, Mr. Johnson. We do have education folks in the room, and there was a question around how this applies in terms of intervening with students that are when there's a property situation. And Mr. Johnson, if you could speak to that. This was done in the Senate yesterday, and I was wondering if it could be addressed here just so folks can hear that on the record.
Sure. Yeah. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Frazier, members, my understanding of the questions that have come up are related to when people who are not law enforcement officials can also use force. 60906 has been spoken about extensively during these various committee hearings, largely in the context of peace officers. But that section does not apply exclusively to peace officers. There are, you can see the entire statute if you look at page 3 and 4 and 5 of your bill, actually 3 and 4. You can see that there are 10 clauses listed under 60906 that authorize the use of force. Some of those clauses have general application. They do not specify that they are limited in any way to a particular type of person or group. Some of them, however, do have limits. For example, Clause 1 is limited to public officers, which generally includes peace officers. Clause 8 applies to common carriers. However, there are multiple clauses that do not have any similar limitation. That includes the one that's best known, which is Clause 3, which is our right to self-defense. That applies broadly and generally to every person. It also includes Clause 4. Clause 4 says that there's this right to use reasonable force when used by any person in lawful possession of real or personal property or by another assisting the person in lawful possession in resisting trespass upon or other unlawful interference with such property. That would apply, again, to any person, as it says in the statute. Obviously, any person would include teachers. I believe that some questions about this have come up because of the change that is in 609.379, which you can see at the top of page 5 of the bill language. That did strike a reference to property. However, it's important to note that the change also added a new paragraph, and that new paragraph B says that nothing in this section limits any of the other authorizations to use reasonable force, and specifically cites back to 609.06 subdivision 1, which includes that clause that I just referenced. So the elimination of the reference to property in 609.379 is actually a broadening of the general right for teachers to use reasonable force, and also parents who are listed in that particular statute, to use reasonable force in all of the situations in 60906 that apply to any person. I could sit here for a while and walk through all of them, but I think that addresses the property damage question.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And I neglected to thank you when I was going through the list of thank yous, because I'm not sure anybody's worked on this bill, perhaps other than Representative Frazier and Senator Westland, than Mr. Johnson. I'm assuming you have every sentence and every line memorized at this point. But we really appreciate, very much appreciate all your hard work on this. Closing comments, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the conversation that we've had around this. You know, I'm hoping for a very great outcome when we set up this system of comprehension and uniformity around the state. And I have to say to the advocates and to the stakeholders and everyone that's been engaged in this, I understand why this conversation has been so passionate, why folks have been so engaged about this. Again, we're coming off of such a tragic situation when we had the murder of George Floyd, and that vision still resonates with many folks. But I also believe that, you know, out of what happened there, we have made some changes, and we're making strides to be a better Minnesota for everyone in Minnesota. And I think that we always have to focus on and find a way to do that together. And I think this process is allowing us to continue to do that, and I'm looking forward to the work continuing forward.
Thank you. Representative Frazier renews the motion that House File 3489, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails. And members, that concludes today's agenda. We will see you next Thursday. Just a reminder, we will not be meeting on Tuesday, and this meeting is adjourned.